This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services, and I am your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. As you know, if you're a regular listener, my co-host is Stone Payton, and I always call him a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio, only today Stone's not in the studio. My heart is with him, though, because he's in Athens this morning going through parent orientation as his daughter goes through student orientation to be a student at UGA this fall. But we do have the great producer, executive producer for this morning, and engineer, Alan Dubrinsky.
Hey, that was good. You did.
You like that? I try to make my greetings to the staff good so that you do work for me well and like me. It's good to have you in here. You've worked with Vanessa, though, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Great, great. Well, I went through what Stone went through 9 years ago, what he's doing today. But as I mentioned, also in the studio with me today is my permanent guest host, Vanessa Lowry. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. It's such a treat to get to play 2 weeks in a row here at your radio show.
Can you handle that?
I think I can. You know, we're going to miss Stone, but it's going to be fun. We've got some great guests today.
There might be less levity and more seriousness.
It may be.
But then again, I think about our guests, and I'm not so sure about that.
That's true.
So we will see. Well, today we're looking at creativity in writing, fiction and nonfiction. And whether classified as fiction or nonfiction, writing does require creativity. And today's guests share their insights into the creative element of writing. Betsy Ray Miner is a freelance writer, and Russ Chapman is a sales representative for VizRT Incorporated. Oh, I need to give a shout-out to some people. We think Monica is listening. She's in Marietta. Jared is listening, if he knows what's good for him, right?
Right.
Okay. And I think Shelley out in Minnesota and some of her friends are listening in, and we're grateful for that. Well, let's get started. Betsy Ray Miner began her career as a newspaper reporter while earning a bachelor's degree in English at Meredith College. Betsy went on to earn a Master of Arts in English from North Carolina State University. Betsy focused on the genres of memoir, autobiography, and oral and family history. And for her master's thesis, she wrote her great-grandmother's biography. Betsy has worked as a freelance writer and editor since 2007 and is affiliated with an amazing company called Right Choice Services. Welcome, Betsy.
Thank you.
So, what motivated you to write a biography of your great-grandmother?
Well, first of all, I was nearing the end of my master's program, and I was ready to stop writing literary analysis papers and start writing something that I was really excited about. At the time, I was 26, and my great-grandmother had passed away about 6 months before, so I had a lot of time with her in my life, and a lot of stories about her I thought were a lot of fun, and I didn't want them to get forgotten. So the next semester after she passed, I was taking a class called The American Autobiography and started to think about not necessarily autobiography, but biography and how I could take things that I remembered about her and things that I had heard about her and put them down on paper in a way that my family would be able to enjoy and would help me remember her.
Now, when I asked you about that a while back, you said it could be seen as creative nonfiction.
Yes.
Would you define what that is?
Creative nonfiction is different from nonfiction in that it reads more like a novel. A really good example of a creative nonfiction book is In Cold Blood. Truman Capote wrote it, I think, mm-hmm. in the 60s. He was kind of the first person to really do that well. So it is a genre where the author will do lots and lots of interviews, lots of research, and put it together in such a way that it reads like more like a novel.
So it really doesn't have to do with we're taking a nonfiction topic and making it borderline fiction.
Well, there are times, and I can give you an example.
Do that.
My great-grandmother lived to be 100.
Mm-hmm.
I was 26 when she died. So 74 years of her life, I didn't know about firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
So there were episodes that I wrote about that I had to rely on other people who were there to tell me about it and then write about it in such a way that it felt like a story not being narrated by someone else, but narrated by myself.
So you use dialogue in it.
Yes. Dialogue, description, all the things that go into a novel get used in creative nonfiction.
So it sounds like you take a real person and a real situation and mm-hmm. just fill in some of the dialogue based on what you know about them.
Absolutely.
And about the other people that knew them.
Absolutely. And sometimes that means making a good educated guess about what someone probably would have said or felt in a situation. So you have to have done a lot of research on a person to be able to do that well.
Did the family anticipate your completed project with anxiety, with joy, or a mix?
Well, they read it after I wrote it. I have a very, very helpful family. So everyone was great about getting lots of phone calls from me, sitting down with me for lots of interviews, finding old pictures, newspaper articles, all kinds of things. So they were great about that. And then they were great about being patient and not asking to read it until it was really finished.
And they trusted you to be kind.
They did. I hope so. I hope they trusted me.
You didn't have a sibling that you thought maybe you could get even with or anything like that?
No, I I was very nice. I don't think my sister appeared too much in the book, but I was kind to her.
See, that's what I was asking indirectly, Alan, because when I wrote my book, Letters to My Sons, my sister was on pins and needles the whole time.
Okay.
And she wondered what I said. First, she said, am I in the book? And I said, well, of course. And she said, and mm-hmm. what did you say? And I said, read it when it comes out. And she was mortified because she was remembering all those times when she picked on her baby brother. But I was kind. I was kind. Betsy, for you, what's the biggest challenge in writing?
I think the biggest challenge in writing, no matter what kind of writing it is, whether it's creative nonfiction or anything else, is making it appeal to your audience. Knowing who your audience is and then writing in a way that will capture their attention.
You're breaking me into a smile on that one, and you know why. But for our listeners, tell them more about that, please, about having to know who your audience is. How specific do you need to be?
You need to be pretty specific. It helps to know exactly who you're writing for, whether it's you're trying to get someone to meet a certain call to action through a website or something else. I don't really feel like my thesis had a particular call to action, but I felt like I was writing for a small audience, mm-hmm. but an audience nonetheless.
So if I were to say to you, I'm going to write to men from 20 to 50 years of age, what would you say to me?
I would say that I probably need to ask you a lot of questions since I'm not a man between 20 and 50, but it can be done.
It can be?
Absolutely.
And do you recommend that people write to a range like that, or is it easier for most people if they pick a person that fits in that range to write to?
I've heard some writers say that they, when they do write, they have a particular person in mind. So I imagine that works well. I haven't used that method myself, but it sounds like a good one.
Is creativity a critical piece of all writing? I mean, even if you're not writing creative nonfiction, if you're
right.
just writing nonfiction, what's the role of creativity?
Well, I think creativity is really important, kind of for what I was saying before. You don't want your audience to be bored.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep that from happening, I guess there is good reason to get creative.
Do you have any way that you kind of stoke your creativity? Do you have you know, a certain writing ritual that you do or a certain chair you sit in or anything that you do to keep that creativity flowing?
I can't think of any particular thing. I read a lot, so I'll read certain things in certain books that I like that will make me kind of get my creative juices flowing, I guess. So I guess reading what other people have written is helpful to me.
So that spurs on ideas for
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. I think so.
Now, I've had Jack and Mary Branson on here a few weeks ago, and they are writers full-time. That's all they do. Well, Jack's a latecomer to writing. He used to be an FBI agent or a federal agent. You are in the writing business.
I am.
What possessed you to make that decision?
Well, as you mentioned, I majored in English, mm-hmm. and I was the last person among my friends to declare a major. I was kind of under the gun, and I didn't know what I wanted to do when I graduated from college, but I picked English because I knew I liked reading and writing and talking about reading and writing. So I kind of picked a major first and picked a career second.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I didn't want to be a teacher. So that ruled out a pretty big profession that people who study English
mm-hmm.
do
mm-hmm.
later. And through internships and other things, I narrowed in on the journalism aspect at first. So that worked instead of having to go be a teacher, which is great, but it just isn't for me.
Mm-hmm. So people who listen know that this show is sponsored by Right Choice Services, and
mm-hmm.
you are an independent contractor for Right Choice
I
Services.
Am.
Imagine that.
That's the disclosure, right?
That's the disclosure.
Betsy, I'm sorry. I was just going to piggyback onto that question because I have a stepdaughter who's going to be third year at UGA,
mm-hmm.
and she quit her job as a waitress. And so my advice to her is, I said, well, you're in the School of Journalism, start writing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, there's got to be a way to make money, right,
mm-hmm.
if you're a writer. When did you decide, I'm a writer? At what point in your career? And how do you like get to that point where you say, okay, I'm a writer, now I'm going to start writing?
Well, the first thing I did when I decided I was going to be an English major but not a teacher, and I needed to figure out another avenue. I started writing for the school paper.
That's a good start.
So that was a good start. That was a place where I thought, okay, if I like this, this is a good direction to go in. So I did that first. Later did an internship also at a newspaper in a town nearby,
mm-hmm.
and that felt like a good path. So.
Cool. And now here you are, right here,
here
right
I
now.
Here I am, yes. No longer a newspaper writer, but that was a good foundation.
So you consider yourself a full-time writer?
Yes.
And every day you wake up and you say, I'm going to write. Cool.
Yes.
Well, this is what I advise my daughter. I said,
good.
Write every day. Get up and treat it as like it's your career, like mm-hmm. it's your business.
That was good fatherly advice. It really was.
And I'm going to have her listen to this, too.
Oh, good. Good. Well, when we're off air, let me give you a story about my son, who was an engineer but wrote for the Red and Black, and what the impact that had for him. Well, Betsy, we need to move on, but if people... Is your great-grandmother's autobiography available for people to read?
It's online. All the theses that are published at NC State, and I guess... other universities are accessible
available
to the public. If you Google my name,
mm-hmm. Why don't you spell that out? Do
okay.
they have to do the whole thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, my name is spelled B-E-T-S-Y. Last name is R-H-A-M-E. And that was my name when I was a student. So if you put that in and then another term like great-grandmother, it probably will come to the top.
Okay, and then they can read all about you.
They can read all about it.
Now, if people have questions for you that listen to you today,
mm-hmm.
how would they be in touch with you?
My email address is betsy@rightchoiceservices.com.
And let me guess, that would be spelled W-R-I-T-E.
That's correct.
Good. Well, we've talked about this. I would like you to stick around while I shift focus and we turn over to Russ, and then we'll open up the mics at the end.
Okay.
Great. Well, Russ Chapman is a very successful sales representative for VizRT. The company provides technology products and consulting to television broadcasters and television program creators worldwide. Now, Russ has a BA in computer science from Southern Polytechnic State University and a minor in pharmacology. Do I remember correctly?
I remember those years, yes.
You remember that. And during your free time, you like to write humor and you mix it with brass tacks, life-changing concepts and new ideas about the nature of our existence. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement, yes.
Well, great. Russ, it's good to have you with us this morning. How did you start writing, or why did you start writing?
Always been writing since I was 12 years old. I would sit in my room and write naturally, but at some point in my life, I turned away from writing and started chasing different degrees and money. And then now I'm back to doing what I love to do the best, which is to just do what comes naturally for me, which is to live life and write about it. I don't have to force myself or make a schedule for that. It's something I can do at 3 a.m. or 3 p.m.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that's just my write. Every day.
But you're a sales rep.
Correct.
Which puts you on the road quite a bit, doesn't it?
No, actually, I have transitioned from 90% travel to about 25% travel because I can now convey the message with proposals in writing that tell the message as well as I can tell it in person.
Yes,
so I can do in person, you know, win the trust of the customer that I am a good guy and I know what I'm doing, but yet follow up with information and documents that are very a day in the life of your new product, and that's been effective so far. So I don't have to travel near as much.
That's got to be exciting for you.
It is, but I miss travel. Travel has some of the most interesting and variety of stories you can come up with.
But your creative writing, because most of what you write is nonfiction, is fiction, isn't it?
It's fiction. Well, it's some of it is fictional nonfiction, which is the funny part. So it's like we mentioned earlier, where it's taking something that is true in context and true in maybe 50%, and then adding 50% of fiction to it. So the character's true, the life is lived, but it's probably exaggerated more so to prove a point or to entertain the audience more. It's really a mix. Metaphysical, for example, spiritual is reality and non-reality. Fictional and non-fictional is how you put the context in for the reader. Humor sometimes has to be fictional, but you have to have a real life character to base it around. And that's where I get my inspirations from for that.
So when you were 12, what were you writing?
Everything going on around me. I remember very clearly sitting there thinking, I need something to write about. And then that night, my dog fell behind the bed onto the vent in the middle of the winter, took a poop, pardon the expression, down the vent without us knowing it. We woke up the next day at 6 a.m. and the whole house smelled like dog poop. Well, mom was yelling at me. We find the dog poops down the vents. Heater's still going. I put my clothes on. I go to school. Everyone in the classroom's checking their shoes for poop. I smell like poop all day. So I wrote a story about that and got it into the school paper. And that was
the beginning of your writing career.
So careful what you ask for. If you ask for an idea or inspiration, you will get some weird ones. And I've gotten plenty of them very similar to that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it sounds like that you've really kind of honed your storytelling ability to embellish the stories to make them take what's really true, but really make it more fun.
Exactly. I mean, life stories. Like, you know, true. Sometimes the true story just doesn't get the point across. So it's good to take events and then expand upon them, and that's the funnest part. And it seemed funner to actually be a part of the event, and then write about it from a first person perspective as if you were there as well. It's one thing to write about, say, Russia. It's another thing to go there for 10 days and then write about it. Okay, I can kind of put myself in different kind of situations in my head as well as what really happened when I was there, which makes it really it's fun to live that and write that.
So now, were you in Russia on business or pleasure?
Pure 10 days of doing nothing but living as fast as I could for 10 days and writing about it. And I got into all kind of trouble, but it was well worth the trip.
Until they kicked you out and sent you back home.
No, actually, I left my visa and my passport at the hotel, and I got pulled over at 4 a.m. as the sun is coming up by three military police officers who had guns and wanted a bribe to keep me from going to jail. And I was so idiotic that I told them that I will give them a third of what they're asking for. And they both, all three agreed.
It was 100
rubles split three ways versus 300 rubles split three ways. And then back at the hotel, and I was like, I can't believe I did that. But I wrote about it for a travel website the next day, and then kept doing different things every day to I mean, that's a true story. I just had many true stories that I wrote about.
We call that chutzpah.
Yeah.
Chutzpah. Yeah, that would be. That would
it was scary, but looking back at it, it couldn't have been any other way. It wouldn't have been a fun story without me having gone through it myself.
Well, have you had your stuff published?
I have for websites. Back when I was single, traveling as single male, there was we basically published stories about kind of your trips as a single person and what it's like. I published some stories there. You don't get paid for that. I did it for fun.
Yeah.
Nothing's been published for pay. When I was in IBM traveling, we did an internal website where we actually would publish. I'd publish stories of our travel logs, which meant after a while people quit doing anything at all around me because I kept writing about it. And
they knew they would read about it later.
So I spent a lot of time alone actually on these trips across around the world, having fun and writing about it. So who knows if it's true or not? But it was fun.
Well, how do you put together your fun writing and your business writing now?
Business writing, it helps me. I've learned the art of continual focusing for 4 or 5 days straight, up 12 to 14 hours a day on a particular subject matter without losing the concentration. So what I've been able to do is I've been able to, with business, you have people. There's a team of people looking at this, not just one editor, there's 10 editors.
Mm-hmm.
There's someone who's got $1 million on the line for what you're trying to put in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you better be accurate, you better be right. So I learned the art of research, learning things myself, as well as keeping a full story from start to finish. And I learned how to edit myself very effectively that way.
So you will actually write for that length of time?
I spent all day yesterday writing, and I spent all day last week writing. I took Saturday and Sunday off to sit in a pool and smoke ribs and drink beer.
That sounds like a good holiday adventure.
Yep.
I think what's significant for me is a lot of people, when they talk about writing, will say that, write 500 pages or 500 words and be done, write 3 pages and be done. You just write.
I have written up to 20,000 words in a single sitting.
Wow, that's impressive.
Not to say that's meat. Go re-edit that. You're down to you're down to 15 to 10, and sometimes you find yourself going off into different spaces in your head that should not. So in writing proposals, I've learned how to, when I write for myself and things I'm trying to get published, I've learned how to keep the context. And I got to keep the flow a lot better and re-edit myself in real time versus having to stop and wait a day and go back. So I've learned a lot from my job when it comes to that kind of mechanical parts of writing, but the creativity part is strictly my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get that from work whatsoever, except the people I work with are very European and fun.
But you realize when you start to write that you have 2 or 3 drafts to go yet, or that you're going to be editing.
Oh, of course, yes. But I like to get all the meat down. I start at the end, and I start at the beginning. I write the end first. I already know what the ending is going to be, whether it's one sentence or one paragraph. And then I write the beginning, whether it's one sentence, one paragraph. Then I do an outline. Then I just start letting it flow. And when I say letting it flow, that means if it's something that means something to me, it's going to flow. If it's not flowing, I'm forcing it. Therefore, I shouldn't be writing it, and I move on to the next idea.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
You can't force creativity. They can't exist in the same space at the same time.
Now, I did not pay you to be on here. That's my disclaimer.
No, I'm having a blast, though. I'm loving this.
The reason I say that, though, is when I work with my writing clients, I will often say to them, write your last sentence so you know where you're going. It may change in process, but at least you know where you're heading and you're going to work to get there. And you've just said that.
Yep, that's exactly how.
That's why I needed to put that disclaimer out there.
I think Shel Silverstein had the same ideas when he wrote. He oftentimes did the ending for his stories. He would write for Playboy or for his own stuff, and then he just would backtrack.
Did he write for Playboy?
He actually did. No, the autobiography of Shel Silverstein is he is the most interesting Renaissance man in the history of
modern man. I read that book too. It's fascinating.
Fantastic. It was.
He also wrote a lot of songs.
He wrote
for Captain Hook,
Boy Named Sue.
Yeah, that's right.
Cover of a Rolling Stone.
Yeah,
he was big into the country scene. And then, but he was big in the Playboy scene too. He was definitely a womanizer 101. But women loved him anyway.
Yeah. And what was fascinating for me is, you know, I used to be in ministry, and when I would often use Shel Silverstein's book, The Giving Tree, because it is just an amazingly powerful story mm-hmm. for children and for adults, and I usually would read it around stewardship time. And there were always some people who would come up to me afterwards and say, remind, you know, this is after church, and I'm still in my preaching robe, and they would say, isn't he the one who wrote other things than for children's books?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, well, yeah. So what do you write? What are some of the things you've got going right now, Russ?
From a serious side, I got the book, a manuscript called The Cult of You, which is basically helping just give people a new guidance for their life versus people look for religion and other therapists and psychologists and drugs to find their true meaning. And The Cult of You is about how you can find it for yourself without any kind of outside influence. The Cult of Jesus is for those Christians stuck in Christianity and want to get out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun and also serious book. Let me take a look there. 3 More Days is another story kind of about what really happened to Jesus those 3 days in the tomb between mm-hmm. death and resurrection. So it's kind of a play on the humanity of Jesus and what he's saying to himself as he's talking about his life,
mm-hmm.
recounting stories we didn't read about in those four small gospels written by people who are not writers. If that ain't country, I'll kiss your fanny. Is a story about my Uncle Jimmy. At his visitation, he had 2 shotguns and a deer head next to his casket, and he was wearing camouflaged.
Oh, my. All right.
And his life is one for the books. So that's the title I've come up with for his life. And I'm going to go research it with my family because it's some really crazy stuff. And he's a really interesting guy. He was a week removed from from moonshine before he died. He's not a lot, you know, he just liked to have a good time. Every day was a Saturday. The other one is Devotions for the Simple-Minded, which is a really a redneck country kind of way of looking at things. You read these books now, the devotions, they're just so all over the place. So, you know, wonderful, beautiful, blah, 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 blah. But brass tacks reality is we need something very simple for your day.
Mm-hmm.
Alternative wisdom, so to speak, something that you can put into practice right here, right now, not something that's sounds good for centuries to come and fits all, you know, all kind of lifestyles.
Well, that's an interesting kind of picture you present because you travel or you used to travel globally and you still have business connections globally.
Mm-hmm.
The company for which you work has a lot of connections. You can see them on television shows all the time, and you're writing redneck stuff.
Yeah, I was... For 21, 22 years, I grew up on 2,000 acres of land, and all I did was play the life of the quintessential country boy. In the summertime when kids got out of school, I shot things and fished for things, and I drove RTVs, and I hunted, and I did bow and arrow, and I did everything. And there's a reason why I didn't lose my virginity till I was 20 was because I'm too busy hunting and fishing to give a crap. You know? I mean, that's uh-huh. how it was. And my dad told me, he goes, you're not going to... He goes, I'm a lucky farmer. He goes, you're not cut out for this. And he never pushed it on me, and he actually kept me away from the farming aspects. But he let me enjoy the hunting and outdoor aspects.
Uh-huh.
And were not for that, I would probably still be on the farm today trying to figure out how to make money. But he pushed me away from it.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I got pushed into just making money only, mm-hmm. not writing about it. But that's on me. I kind of mm-hmm. go with that. So,
Russ, I'm curious. I know that we were chatting a little bit before the show started that you – have been sending queries out to a number of different publishers mm-hmm. with all the different manuscripts that you've created. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things that publishers look for these days is they look for what kind of a platform of people might potentially buy your book.
Right.
Have you mm-hmm. considered
That's a tough one.
Have you considered doing a blog or anything to start building up a platform of readers?
Yeah, a friend of mine actually put a website up called winadatewithrusschapman.com. And we use that as a platform to get people interested in this alter ego personality, which would then spawn, you know, books, et cetera. But at some point, I deal with technology so much in my job that I like to put my hands on a piece of paper mm-hmm. and read something someone's taken the time to write and sign with their signature. And I prefer to send that to someone. Whether they want that or not is irrelevant for me. I'm going to do that and send that. I don't like blogs. I don't like the idea of getting on and just typing randomly like that and tweeting. And I don't even like email, to be honest with you. A letter is just fine. I just have no interest in doing something like that. I figure if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, and it's all about timing and connections, and those things happen face-to-face and just being around and being involved in life. So I prefer to get out of the house a little bit now.
Okay.
Now, is there a way people can read some of your writing?
Yeah, actually, you can. Well, if you'd like to, if you're an agent or a publisher just looking at your rejection list, you can read a couple that I've sent you already. However, you can actually email me and request some things, and I'll send them to you.
And give us that.
Yes, let me give you an email address. It's Savvy, S-A-V-V-Y, _ country, C-O-U-N-T-R-Y, _ boy, B-O-Y, at yahoo.com. So Savvy, _ country, _ boy, at yahoo.com. And, I'll send you whatever you want to read.
Well, that's great.
I'll write something for you.
You'll even give them some prompts, and you'll create the story, right?
Yeah, actually, certainly. I mean, that's what I used to do. Just on a real quick side note, I used to go to bars and clubs and other places, and I would just walk in there, and I would just find someone, and I'd walk up to them, and I'd say, I'm about to write you a poem. And I'd take a napkin and a pen. I'd get them in a corner, and I'd write what came in my head. And I'd hand it to them and sign it and say, there you go. And it was always the sweetest things to come out that I didn't think about. Yeah, things that actually were true for them that I didn't know was true for them, and they, only they would know.
Wow.
So I like writing in front of the people, too.
Well, that's great. You know. Well, let's open up the mics so that the two of you can... I'm hoping that you might have questions for each other or wonderments. Go ahead.
Well, and I actually have a question for the two of you. Based on one of the comments you just made, I'm wondering how much your intuition plays into your creativity and your writing.
I'll let you go first.
Okay, well, I think for me, intuition came into play when I was working on my thesis. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, there were things that I wasn't present for, but I needed to write about. So I had to rely on intuition sometimes to think about, okay, what is the most likely thing this person would have said or done or felt in this certain situation?
What about you, Russ?
Let's see, the grandest things have come when I've not been trying to think about them, and I've gotten these things to pop in my head, and I just go and I start writing a room with it. But life experiences also have inspired me to looking back at the course of my life also at the same time. So it's a bit of impromptu inspiration that comes to me, and then a lot of it is what I've just been hammered in my head for 10 years that I have to get out on paper so no one else has to go through that ever again like I did. So, you know, it's a mix of both.
And do you carry a little notebook around
always,
with you?
Always. Actually, Shel Silverstein used to carry one constantly, and people hated his guts because he kept writing in the middle of conversation. I'm about to lose my girlfriend as a result of that as well.
Oh, no.
But I keep everything handy around me, and I write down whatever comes to my head, even if it's not convenient for others to be a part of that. So...
Well, between the two of you, I've got almost polar opposites. You know, you're trained. You've got the degrees, and you've just got the I got a right urge.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
How do you react, Betsy, with your proper training, should we say? How do you react? What goes through your mind when you hear Russ talking about I started at 12 and I haven't stopped yet?
Well, one thing I wondered about you, Russ, is do you finish one story before you start another? Do you have things going on all the time?
I bounce. So it really depends. If there is, I try to keep 10 to 15 things going at the same time, but I focus on one as long as I can until it has come out of me as far as it will come out, and then I will go to the next one. In parallel to that, I'll keep track of things that are ideas. I may only have nothing but a one paragraph and a one title sitting somewhere in a folder mm-hmm. called Tabled on my laptop. But it's always something constant, consistent, which probably makes it more difficult for me in a lot of ways, and it's probably a lot easier for you because you seem more focused on the task at hand, which is something that's the yin and yang, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's you got to have that focus, but at the same time, I have a hard time with that. All the time.
Focus?
Yeah.
So, Betsy, I know you do a lot of business writing. Can you describe some of the types of things that you write for business
sure.
clients?
Sure. Some of the things that I've done for business clients are company websites, either from scratch or helping them communicate new business services or products they're offering. Newsletters are a big part of what I help businesses with, and things like brochures, blogs, anything else that they need to have to communicate with their customers and potential customers.
And so do you also go in when they've got a website and you can go in and help them edit their website and fine-tune the content that they have
Sometimes,
on there?
Sometimes I'll work with clients who've already either written everything they think they want on the website and they need someone to look at it, or they've started and for some reason have had to move on to another project and not finish. So I've picked it up wherever it needs to be picked up.
So you just help them put their best foot forward so that they can really say what they want to say in as few words as possible.
Right, right.
Well, in the same fashion, I guess I want to look at you, Russ, and say, how many of your business clients know that you write?
They all do, and I send them travel log stories.
Oh, you do?
I'll do something really, by all accounts, stupid, and I will somehow not get put in jail for it when I'm on a business trip, and I will send it to just a select people, and they will, you know, with pictures to prove it and stuff like that. They all know I write. The people who know I'll write, who care about what is written about them, tend to just be real preacher-like when they're around me. When I used to travel a lot, I don't travel as much anymore, so a lot of this stuff is stuff that I just do on my own on the side. But everybody knows I like to write,
And they enjoy what you share with them.
That's correct. Or they're lying. One of the two. I mean, I enjoy it, but for the most part, I get back a lot of LOL, you know, and stuff like that. Or hey, that's a really great story. Those who are more focused on. Who are more focused on the business side of life and kind of more serious 24/7, they don't tend to like what I write. The ones who can looking for something they really want to say but can't say it, like something very sarcastic. Those who read stuff like that, who are very serious, will just email me and say, "I've always wanted to say that to a customer," and I've just written it out. You
get away with it, huh?
Because it's not published.
So when you use other people's, when other people are in your stories, do you use pseudonyms or aliases for
them? Yeah, I'm working on one now for about my childhood and the interesting people I've met. And they've all got these special names, and they're adults now, and we're having adult conversations talking about how life is not how we wanted it to turn out. So they get these special pseudo names, you know, Dapper Dan or something idiotic, like, you know, the Slim Jim Jason, Slim Jim something. It depends on the person, whatever pops in my head at the time. But for the most part, I'll just make up a name and just run with it. I never quote them. I don't know. I wouldn't want that for myself either.
That's good.
I quote myself, though, but not that.
Yeah.
Well, the clock is on us. As always, I welcome comments and suggestions about the content and our guests. So, our listeners, if you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Simply send us an email, whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Vanessa, for being with me again today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me here.
It was good. Thank you to our guests, Betsy Rame Miner and Russ Chapman. Betsy, your contact information?
My email address, again, is betsy@rightchoiceservices.com.
And Russ?
Savvy_country_boy@yahoo.com.
Okay. Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to gain access to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at Right Here, Right Now. That's WRITE, Right Here, Right Now, .businessradiox.com. The MP3 version is available later in the day. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.